Only you can make changes to your lifestyle, the way you live. And no one else can do it for you. Other people might suggest changes you can make, but only you can put them into practice.
Welcome to Women of Hope. I'm Tammy. Carol, what you just said is so true.
Hi there. I wonder if you agree, and I wonder what kinds of changes that you would like to make to your lifestyle.
What kind of changes are you thinking about, Carol?
I'm thinking especially about changes that would improve your health. Maybe you could ask yourself questions like these. Am I neglecting or hurting my health in any way? For example, am I overweight? Do I drink too much? Smoke? Take drugs or do something else that's harmful to me or my family? Are there health risks in my family background? For example, heart disease or skin cancers. Could I avoid them by making healthy changes to how I live? Do I need to exercise more? Do I drink enough water?
That's a lot to think about.
It is. Once you know what needs changing, then you can start thinking of ways to make it happen. Let's take a moment and think of things in each of our own lives that we really know need to change.
I wonder what you thought about. I thought of something that I had to change to be more healthy. My husband loves running long distances. He is even trained for the Olympics, but I don't enjoy running, even to catch the bus or answer the phone. So I had to find a way to exercise with him while he was exercising.
And how did you do that?
Well, I found that I can ride a bicycle and keep up with him as he runs. This I do enjoy very much. I also love swimming. I grew up near the beach and swam a lot when I was a child. Now I have to find a swimming pool to do that, but it's not always easy to find the time to do enough exercise.
No, you really have to make an effort, don't you? So here's an important question. In the past, what has stopped you from making changes? Or helped you to make changes? To make these changes, it's helpful to understand a little bit more about yourself, like what motivates you, what your goals are, and what has happened in the past when you've tried to make changes in your life. So first, let's think about one thing that you know needs to change. Ask yourself, what made me want to make this change last time? Or maybe, what happened in the past to stop me making this healthy change? For example, if you tried to give up smoking, what made you start again? Or did you start to do regular exercise, but you didn't keep going? Why? Think about what has been helpful and what has not been helpful in the past. It's important to get back to the helpful things, if possible.
Okay, suppose I know what needs to change, and I've thought about what helped me in the past and what didn't help. So, what do I do next?
Well, you need to work out your goals. What do you want to achieve by making these changes? Ask yourself, what are my long-term goals for my health? For example, do I want more energy? Do I want to live a longer life? Maybe you'd like to be able to walk to the market without getting short of breath.
Well, sure, we dream about being healthy and active, but how do we make those dreams come true?
We need short-term goals to work on over the next few days or weeks. For example, If you want to be more fit, you could plan to walk for 30 minutes every day. If you want to lose weight, you could decide to eat fruit instead of cakes.
I get it. If you want to stop smoking, you could plan to smoke half as many cigarettes as usual for the next week, then reduce it by half again each week.
That's it. Short-term goals need to be things to do, not just to wish for or feel. And they need to be very clear so that you can see whether you've done them or not. Can you think of something that you could do this week that would start those changes?
So we thought about our long-term goals, the dreams that make us want to change, and our short-term goals, the things we want to do in the next few days to a month. You might say, I want to walk for 30 minutes a day so I feel better and have more energy. Then I'll be able to do more active things with my children. They'll enjoy that, and I'll keep feeling better and keep getting more exercise. So I expect the next question for us to ask ourselves is, am I ready?
Exactly right. You have to be ready to make changes that last. Someone might say, oh, I've tried to lose weight before, but my heart wasn't in it. Or they may say, I wanted to give up smoking, but I tried to do it when my kids were leaving home, or when my husband retired, or when I had to look after my mom. Then someone else might say, the time is right, and I knew this time I had to put all my energy into being able to stop smoking, or my health was going to get much worse. You see, and this is the big difference. When you're truly ready for change, change becomes so much easier.
And you might need support. Ask yourself, who can I turn to? Who will support me in any changes I want to make to my lifestyle? Who will ask me whether I kept to my plans? Where could I learn more about how to be healthy? Maybe you could take an education course at the community health center. You may even need the help of a doctor or a healthcare worker, a psychologist, a support group, a friend, or even a group of friends. Thank you for being with us on Women of Hope. We're talking together about how we can make healthy changes to our lifestyle. We've thought about what we need to change, what has helped in the past, and what has not helped in the past. We've thought about our goals, our short-term goals, and our long-term goals. What do we really want to achieve by making this change? And we've thought, are we ready, really ready to make this change? And where can we get the right support? We all need support because it's so easy to give up or not even start.
That's exactly what I was going to say next. We often don't make changes because of negative, unhelpful thoughts. If we slip back into our old habit, we think we have no chance of changing. Have you ever given up trying to lose weight because you ate some unhealthy food? Did you think, oh, if I can't do it right, I won't do it at all? When you start to think negatively, you can't see anything positive. You might say, I always fail. I know I'll fail this time too.
So someone with an alcohol problem might say, it's impossible. If I stop drinking, I'll feel too stressed. When they could say, I can think of times when I've been stressed and I haven't reached for a drink.
And this is why you need to have the right support in place before you start. Making life changes is not easy, especially when you want to change an old habit.
So where do we go from here? Maybe it's been easy for you to think of something that needs to change in your life. You know it's not healthy. You know if you made that change, the family would be happy and you would feel good about yourself. So, any changes you make are really up to you. There are always reasons not to change. So we have to be strong in the way we think and act if we're going to make long-term changes.
Let me encourage you to take one step at a time. And don't be too disheartened if you take a step backwards every now and again. As long as you gradually move towards healthier choices, then you're a long way from where you started, from the unhealthy to the healthier. And remember, if you need further support, it's important that you look for help and information from people who are there to help you, like your doctor or healthcare worker, a psychologist, a nurse, a support group, or a trusted friend.
We've been talking about making big changes in your life or lifestyle and how important it is to have support like a friend or group of friends.
But having that support is also important when something unexpected comes up, something you cannot handle on your own. Our friend Naomi is back again today to tell us about a time when she needed a lot of support and help. Welcome, Naomi, and thank you for coming to talk to us again.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. And today I'm going to tell you a story about a difficult time we had. And Darren, my husband, is one of those men who loves sport. And no matter what sport he tries, he does it really well. He's played soccer and squash in Australia, and then in Nepal, when we were there, he started bike riding. So when we returned to Australia, he started competing in Ironman events. And that meant he would swim long distances in the ocean and then ride his bike and then run half marathons. And it was very hard work. It was hard work just watching him. But during the winter of 1999, he would come in from his run and put his head down on the kitchen table and say, I don't know why I feel so terrible. And this went on for a while. And then he decided he should go and visit the doctor, which was a big step because he hardly ever does. And the doctor wasn't very helpful. He said, well, of course you're tired. You run a long way. It's normal. But Darren was actually sure that something was wrong. And so he told the doctor he wanted to see a special heart doctor. So on the 1st of November, he went off to see the heart doctor. And I remember he rang me from the clinic and he said, Naomi, they say I have to go straight to the hospital. I need a big operation. It's very serious. It's my heart. I could die. I have ventricular tachycardia, which means my heart beats much faster than it should. And then he said, I can't come home.
What a shock that must have been.
Yes, it was. Darren, then the very next day, he had a 3-hour operation to find out what was wrong with his heart. And even after that operation, the doctors didn't know what to do. I mean, he's only 33 at this stage, and they kept him in the hospital and watched him closely. And at the time, I had a newborn baby and I had a 4-year-old. And it was very hard. And after some days, he said to me, you know, I am ready to die. If that's God's plan, I'm ready. I know that he's in charge and I'm okay with that. Just that I don't want to leave you. And I looked back at his face. I couldn't stop crying. And then after a few days of visits to the hospital, and I was trying to look after the boys, and I was so stressed and tired. And I remember my friend Michelle, she arrived at the door. I've known her since I was 12. So she's that kind of friend. She just made me go straight to bed and she looked after the boys. And I remember sleeping heavily. I was so tired and I didn't even hear the phone ring. But I remember Michelle coming into the room with tears in her eyes. And she said, "Well, your dad's been on a rock climbing holiday and he's had a terrible accident. He had a fall. They think he's broken his back. He's in hospital. He might not live." And I looked at her, just not understanding, feeling numb. And it was a while until I could ring and talk to my father's doctor. And they didn't know anything. They wouldn't know for a few days what would happen to him, except that it was very serious. And I was actually too far away to get down to see him. But 2 days later, I rang again, and he was still alive, but he was a complete paraplegic. So he had no feeling or movement below his chest, and he would never walk again. And that was so hard, but I couldn't leave Darren, who was also in a hospital, and he needed another operation, but he had to wait until the hospital had space for him. So they actually let him come home to wait for his operation, so long as he did no exercise at all, because that's what was almost all of the time bringing it on. So the first day at home, it was good. It was nice to be together again. And Darren was just walking slowly from room to room, sitting down. He was cuddling the boys and he was watching his heart rate monitor. And so was I all of the time, but it stayed nice and low. You see, and a few days later, Darren was feeling okay, you see, and he's the kind of guy you can't sit still hardly ever. So he was getting bored of walking room to room. So he said, "Well, why can't we go out? Why don't we just have a day in the city?" He says, "So long as I'm walking, it should be fine." So we did. We went on a train and into the city and we got off the train and we were walking towards the harbour. And his heart rate was still normal. We knew that because we kept looking down at the monitor. And we kept walking a little bit further and I looked down at again at the monitor and it read 234 beats a minute. And that wasn't good at all. So Darren, he sat down on the footpath and I don't really remember the next few seconds, but I think I called an ambulance and I couldn't tell them where I was. I didn't even know where I was in the city. Didn't know a street name. But I think there must have been some other guy in the background because I think he told them and then the ambulance came. And I remember they're putting Darren on a stretcher and he disappeared into the back of the ambulance. The engine started off, the siren wailed, and I'm watching the ambulance disappear around the corner. And there I was, standing in the city centre with our two small boys. I didn't even know where they'd taken him. I didn't know. I didn't have anything. I didn't know anything. And there are quite a lot of hospitals in the city centre in Sydney. So I found it somehow a taxi. I think the fellow helped me as well. And I started visiting hospitals and actually found him in the first emergency room, the first hospital we visited. And they said he could go home and wait for the operation, but we weren't to have any more outings. And so for the next 3 weeks, he did nothing. He just sat, which was good, and his heart rate stayed nice and quiet. But mine was high. I was just had so much energy, and I reviewed all my life-saving skills. I kept the emergency phone numbers in my pocket. I mean, I was terrified. I'd pick up the phone all the time and make sure it was still working. And during that whole time, it felt like I hardly spoke to God. I just called out, "Help!" a few times during the day, and that was about it. I felt like I was just surviving moment by moment. But I did deeply know that God was there with us. And then the doctors rang to give us a date for Darren's surgery, and he went to the hospital the day before on a Sunday, and I went to church with the boys as normal. And I don't remember any of the service. I was just trying not to think about the next day. But I do remember that the last song for the morning was "Great is Your Faithfulness." And the pastor announced it and I turned to the page in my songbook and I looked at the words and I knew them very well. But on that Sunday, I didn't think I could sing them. Great is your faithfulness. great is your faithfulness. Morning by morning, new mercies I see. All I have needed, your hand has provided. Great is your faithfulness, Lord, unto me. The thing is, it's all very well to sing, Great is your faithfulness, and you can see God's goodness around you. But it's so much harder to sing when all you can see is fear. And I just started thinking, well, what if Darren doesn't survive the surgery? What if God allows him to die? And everybody else around me was standing and singing. I was just staring at the words. I wasn't sure that they could come out. And then I asked myself, well, if Darren did die in the morning, would I still sing to my God who loves me? Would I still sing to my God who gives me everything I need? The answer was yes. I stood and sang. And the next day I sat and waited. I waited for 11 hours while Darren was operated on. And I think that when life hangs in the balance, all sorts of things become clear. Why am I here? What is the purpose in my life? Who is in control of our days? I think in a time when everything looks like it's falling apart, it's time to go deeper and get to know God better. Before the beginning of time, God chose us. He gave us the gift of Jesus Christ. He loves us. And these things are true yesterday, today, and tomorrow. There will not be a time when they are not true, no matter what happens. And some of the words that were special to me from the Bible then are in Romans chapter 8. And it says, who will separate us from God's love? Will we be separated by trouble or distress or harassment or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? I am convinced that nothing can separate us from God's love in Jesus Christ our Lord. Not death or life, not angels or rulers, not present things or future things, not powers or height or depth or any other thing that is created. You see, when we go through a time when death stares us in the face, we learn new things. We see new things, we believe new things, and we hold on to God. And 11 hours later, Darren was wheeled back into the ward from the operating theatre, and he was alive. And 6 months later, after a doctor's check, he was officially cured. But it took me a lot longer than that to calm down, and I think that's okay. God understands he was there with us all of the time, and there will never come a time when he won't be with us always.
Friend, God is faithful. He is the support that you need and long for. If you have questions about anything you heard today,
or you would like to share your story with us, you can write to us in care of this station or at TWR Women of Hope. The email address is twrwomenofhope@twr.org. That's twrwomenofhope@twr.org. Or if you've missed a program or you want to hear it again, visit our website, twrwomenofhope.org, or visit our Facebook page. We do hope you will be with us again. Have a great week filled with God's blessings.